Welcome you back to Dharma in Pyjamas. The topic for today is called Crochet to Save the World. So I'm wearing my my pyjama crochet. Well, actually, it's my dressing gown with the adorned with the crochet I made over our holiday. So I'm hoping some of you at least do some form of crochet or knitting or embroidery or patchwork or whatever it is, but my passion is crochet. And you might have, like me, had this thought, you know, what good am I for the world? What can I, just one person, do to affect the world? You know, I can't cure malaria or COVID. You know, there's very little I can do to help with the coronavirus. You know, I don't have much money, so I can't solve poverty. I don't necessarily feel like I have much political power. So a lot of times in our life, we can feel that what we do feels quite inconsequential. So just to start on a more kind of a non-religious basis about crochet, which is a wonderful kind of thing, because it's, you can't really monetize it because so many people crochet. It's like playing the ukulele. So because it can't be monetized, it's very pure. You just do it for whatever the reason, your personal reason is for doing it. It's kind of outside the realm of economics, which makes it free from that prison of everything kind of reduced down to just a monetary value. It means that we can infuse an act like crochet with great meaning. It means it stays incorruptible. The whole thing about money and justification, all the lies we tell ourselves about money, doesn't have to creep in. And in a way, because it's worthless, because, you know, so many people crochet and we can't put an economic value onto it, it can become priceless. So I wanted to start with just the secular basis of it and how crochet has become a really powerful political statement when it comes to things like yarn bombing. So just in case you haven't heard about yarn bombing, here's some people in Melbourne doing yarn bombing to do with when the Me Too movement first came along, and everyone had the pink pussy hats. And it was around about the time that Pussy Riot, the incredible Russian political punk band, got arrested for playing in one of the churches there. So there's some Pussy Riot kind of, what are those things called, balaclavas there decorating the fence. So the thing about yarn bombing that is so amazing is that you take these public spaces that are usually really unfriendly, that have like aggressive architecture, then they're to deter people, not to encourage people, and it softens them, makes them your own. So a lot of yarn bombing happens by embroidering these harsh metal fences and bars and you know, all the metal posts that stick out of the ground and the ones to dissuade the homeless. So you beautify these public spaces. I was really enthused by the whole idea of yarn bombing, and so instead of going out and graffitiing, you have these yarn bombing grannies and young people in Melbourne going out and decorating public spaces in the dead of night, racing home again, making sure they're not caught by the cops. And then in the morning you might have seen trees covered in crochet or bus shelters or anything like that. So the other thing, of course, about crochet is that I found it is incredible instantaneous way to stop the disturbing emotions arising when you're about to be overwhelmed by them. And the perfect thing happened when I was on hold to Telstra. So we've all been in that situation, haven't we? And It's very easy when you're on hold and you're listening to the terrible music that's playing, and you're just getting going around that loop of all the different computers talking to you. It's so easy to start really stewing and to get so upset because it points out our powerlessness within samsara. And it can really run away with us, and it can ruin our feeling for the whole day. So when I was on the phone to Telstra, I had this terrible time, and I think I cried with frustration. I was so upset. And then I got off the phone. I just thought, okay, I can either get really upset, I can fight it, which makes it worse, or I'm just going to crochet. So I got my crochet out, and within 12 minutes, I was fine. Everything had calmed down. So when we're really upset, there is a refractory period that we're in where, you know, all of our adrenaline's gone and everything. We can't put it back in the box. So fighting that is useless. It actually sucks our energy away. So we have to have something to do that changes the channel, changes the vibe, the feeling. Within that refractory period, using our logic or anything like that, it just doesn't work because we're on tilt. So in that refractory period, it's great to do something that is non-harming and that can calm you down. So, of course, a good Buddhist would do breathing meditation or walking meditation, but I just get out my crochet and it stops those negativities and I get to relax. And within 10 to 12 minutes, I'm fine. The refractory period is over again. And since Glenn Svensson's been doing his course, I realized that what's happening is this natural process that he has been teaching us how to do when we get distracted in meditation. And there are the three things. First, relax, release, and return. So the relaxing, it's no good when something goes wrong to push harder or get tighter because that just makes things worse. So first we've got to relax. Then we release all that tension and then we return to whatever it is that we were doing. So from, you know, our point of view, we return to our bodhicitta motivation, our altruistic motivation for living in the world. So it's a natural thing that happens with crafting, possibly because crafting is, we have the endorphins that are released when we use our hands, and because it is quite a pure space, quite incorruptible. So it's really quite personal. So I have another photo, a non-religious one again to show you about this fellow. Oh, here's some. The second one of the yarn bombing, of transforming quite unfriendly spaces and softening them using wit, humour. So, a lot of yarn bombing goes about taking these very hard and kind of aggressive structures and just subverting it. So I really like this one as well. Now, here's a fellow, an Australian guy, Alfie Date, who at the time that that photo was taken was 106 years old. And he's been knitting since 1932. And every day he knitted an outfit for the little baby penguins that are, saved by the wildlife people, the little orphan penguins, and they've got no way to keep warm. And so he created these incredibly whimsical little jumpers for the penguins. And so there was an interview with him on Radio National a while ago. He's so wonderful, how just so good-natured. So this was his go-to thing, that every day he would do something for others and he'd think kindly of others and it would bring joy to his mind. So I found this really inspiring, just as a secular activity. I know it's so special in so many ways, isn't it? So, knitting's actually from in the in the British Isles, knitting was actually traditionally a guy's thing to do. Somehow it's been kind of feminized in a way once it got to Australia. So if we have a hobby, let's talk about that, because this is just like a temporary way of calming ourselves and maybe thinking about, you know, thinking really good thoughts. But we have to do it each time. It's not really sustainable. And also many times with our hobbies, while they keep us out of trouble, they stop us from harming others, they're actually pretty useless. They're fun, but they are a huge time waster because they don't actually do anything to contribute to the world or to our own life, except just keep us out of trouble for that time. Unless it's something like fishing, which of course, you know, wholesale slaughter of other living beings and complete obliviousness to the suffering of others, of these animals, you know. But what we can do with our hobbies, we can actually bring them onto the path to enlightenment, and then they don't have to be a massive time waster. Because while they're fun, if we don't bring our motivation to it, if we don't use the work the mind with it, they're completely useless. So this was something I really had to come to terms with, because I work a lot with my hands. And when I first started making costumes and things, and many of my friends were kind of, you know, famous and great performers and things, and I was thinking, well, what am I doing? I'm just making clothes. And it is just making clothes until you bring a motivation to it. So what you can do with any hobby is hitchhike all of the Dharma teachings onto it. And because you're using your body, and then you're using your mind, and you're using your speech to reframe what you're doing, it becomes very powerful. And it can become your go-to space to practice Dharma and integrate Dharma. So what happens is, if you hitchhike all of the Dharma teachings onto your hobby, then it becomes as habitual and ingrained and kind of automatic as your hobby. And then virtue becomes second nature. So I'll give you a really easy example. For instance, if you go out and water the garden and you're holding the hose, and you can do the Chenrezig practice of the nectar from the hose continuously flowing to the lower realms and putting out the fires of the hells and bringing a rain of nectar to all the suffering sentient beings. So just that thing of holding a hose, watering the garden, can be this incredibly powerful act of practicing compassion. So after the presentation, what we can do is go through how to hitchhike a Dharma practice onto a hobby. Because pretty much what you do is you take something that you love doing and that doesn't harm others. You can also do things with take things like a chore that you hate doing and hitchhike a Dharma thing onto it. Like I used to hate watering the garden. Now I love it because of what's happening in my mind. So you take the hobby and then you itemize each step. So you each component of the hobby, you distinguish it. And then for each step, you put on a Dharma way of thinking. So I wanted to show you about crochet. And a couple of years ago now, we had a group at Lungri Tampa Centre called Crochet for Rinpoche. And Crochet for Rinpoche was, we all got together and made crochet lotus flowers and then sewed them into a rug and offered them to Rinpoche. And the whole time that we were doing that, we were making prayers for Rinpoche's health and long life. Lama Zopa Rinpoche behind me there, the founder of this centre. So, yeah, that's right. Crochet groups often are called stitch and bitch, aren't they? Because what's associated with it is gossip. And so gossip degenerates, doesn't it? It never ends up being uplifting. And that's how come you can have almost like Third World War conditions in a crochet group, because everyone gets really, really tight about it. But with this, with Crochet for Rinpoche, we set our motivation every time by everything that we do and that we say. May it benefit others. May everything that we make continuously benefit others. And I've got a really nice dedication at the end of how you can dedicate these hobbies, whether it's crafting or cooking or anything. So let me see, the Crochet for Rinpoche. I'll give you an example of how you can hitchhike all of these Dharma things. So even you get your thread, right, the yarn, and you. This is like the moment by moment of our life day by day, and we think, oh, well, what can we do with this continuum of our mind stream? So in a way, what we have is our moment by moment life, and we're trying to make something out of nothing, you know. Here we are, how do we make something out of nothing? So as we're crocheting, we've got the two wings of the bird, isn't it? So Venerable Rabina often talks about the two wings, wisdom and skillful means or compassion. So you need the two wings of the bird always, don't you, to be able to have a balanced life. And just like in tantric practice, when you pick up the bell and dorji, so when you pick up your crochet hook, you can think, I'm holding fast to my hook of compassion. I'm going to hook everybody out of samsara. I'm going to draw them out of samsara. As I do each stitch, I'm drawing them out of samsara. The other thing too with the two hands of the bird, the two wings of the bird, is that when you're doing any kind of craft, you have to make sure that each hand does equal work, don't you? Because otherwise you're going to get RSI, everything's going to have terrible tension. So you need equal parts, compassion and wisdom. And so you can calibrate that. And as you're calibrating your hands, then you can be calibrating your mind. The other thing too, which is interesting, that you can transfer over is that when you're crocheting, you have to have your mind in this nice set of state of equilibrium, not too tight and not too loose. And it's the same when you're doing the squares. You've got to get the tension right. And that is exactly the same with meditation. Now, how many times have we sat down for meditation and just gone, oh, squeeze the mind, and then gone, oh, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it, and just given up? But with something like a hobby, because it's enjoyable, we remember it's enjoyable and we do it to relax, isn't it? And so then if things go wrong, if we do a mistake, we go, oh, whoops, and we just undo it to fix it up. We don't go, oh, no, and get all uptight and hold on to it. And we're happy to undo the mistakes, and we're happy to persevere. So that's one of the main things about crochet, is that joyous perseverance, you can turn into the perfection of joyous perseverance. And you can learn how to do it. And part of it is that really crucial ability to relax. So the other thing, of course, with crochet, so here we have, we're beginning to bring something out of nothing. And the wonderful thing with granny squares is they're a little bit like a mandala. Not only are we bringing order out of chaos, but we're squaring the circle. We start off with a circle and it turns into a square. So like that, then it's like we're developing our stability. What else you can do is with each stitch, you can hitchhike a mantra onto it. So with trebles, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. So instead of using a mala, you can use your granny square to say your mantras. Om Tare Tutare Turi Soha. Om Tare Tutare Turi Soha. Om Tare Tutare Turi Soha. See, whoops, I've done a mistake. And that's the joyous thing, isn't it? Instead of going, oh no, I'm a failure as a human being because I've done a mistake, you just go, oh, whoops, and fix it straight away. And just like with purification, if we fix things straight away, the karma doesn't multiply, it doesn't cascade. And with crochet, you can see if you just keep on going and think that you'll fudge it, you look back and you go, no way, ring, undo it. May I also purify just like that straight away without it going on. What else do we have? So also as you're hooking through, you can think, may I be able to draw forth all of my enlightened potential for the benefit of sentient beings. When we're setting our motivation to crochet, we have the two types. We have the causal motivation and the momentary motivation. So the momentary motivation is something like, oh, I really feel like a break now, I think I'll crochet. That's a motivation in the moment. But the causal motivation, why am I crocheting? It's a lot more than just to relax for just now, because then the benefit only lasts for just now. So from a secular point of view, what we do is we think about who we're crocheting for. And as we're thinking about them, we're thinking good thoughts about them. So at least the mind, you know, is in something positive. But we can make that a lot more. We can think that by doing this practice, may I be able to purify all negativities? May I be able to integrate the Dharma? May I be able to bring joy and happiness to all sentient beings? And so then it becomes not just for one person, but for everybody. And you get to become very familiar with your altruistic resolve. And then, of course, tangle, tangle, tangle. Then you go, may I be able to untangle all of the delusions in my mind? And to untangle, you've got to be quite loose and gentle. So when we have problems, we're usually, aren't we? But you can't do that or it'll snap, just like we snap. So again, it's a way of gentling the mind. And at the end, when you go to tie up, you go, may I tie up all my loose ends. When you're cutting the thread, I won't cut it just yet because I'll finish the round. But when you cut the thread, then you think, may I cut the root of suffering. And what else? Karma, karma. That's right. Well, I'll just do that now. May I cut the root of suffering forever. May I close the door to the lower realms forever. And then when you're winding the thread back in again, then you go, may I integrate the Dharma into my mind stream. May I have no loose ends left over in my Dharma practice. May all of the of our teacher's Dharma wishes come to fruition. And you cut off the loose ends. So we've got something out of nothing. So you can see you can continuously riff on a theme, can't you? So I wanted to tell you a story then about one of the crochet things that I did. So here's this rug that I made during the Bendigo retreat in 2018. So something, you know, incredible, intense teachings of Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and then how do you relax your mind and let everything settle in between sessions. So I did this crochet, and as I started, I didn't know who I was doing the crochet for. Didn't quite have any idea. But then as I was making it, this whole story arose. So we've got five colours, yellow, green, red, white, blue, and they represent the five wisdoms and the five Dhyani Buddhas. And so as I was doing that, I was thinking about each of these wisdoms and these Dhyani Buddhas. And it became apparent that I was making this rug for my dear friend Naomi, who at the time I think was about 12 or 14, something like that. So I was making lots of prayers that she might develop all of the five wisdoms. And then stitching those together are these things of the flowers. And so these are the six perfections, these little rows of flowers. And the thing about the six perfections is that each one contains the other six perfections within it. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 within each of the six perfections. So, you know, the perfection of patience, for instance, also contains the morality of patience, the wisdom of patience, the enthusiasm of patience, the concentration of patience, and so on. Then also, because I know that my dear friend Naomi would sometimes get quite anxious about things, so I put tassels on there. And so the tassels were, with your tassels, no hassles. Remember to get to shake it all out and get loose. And then at the top, this protection bubble. So this represents White Tara's protection bubble. So she, White Tara, the Buddha of health and long life, resides or travels in this beautiful bubble, a little bit like the White Witch of the East in The Wizard of Oz. And so this bubble has the layers white, yellow, red, blue, green, and then on the outside is maroon. And in between each layer is a layer of flowers. So that's this rainbow thread. And then I sewed all the flowers on. And so as I was making this protection, then I was doing lots of White Tara mantras for Naomi that she might be protected. And what else about that? Oh, that's right. And then the other thing here with the way that it's all joined, this kind of 3D wiggly thing. So that was like the chi or the nadis that go through our body. May it have lots and lots of energy and may it be aligned. And then on either end are the bookends of me and my mother. So the pink representing me and the purple representing my mother. And so then that contains the whole thing. Now, so then the next thing that I wanted to show you, just to give you an idea, if you haven't done any crocheting, to recognize that it is actually, it can become quite complex. Like the ukulele, it can be super simple and everybody can do it, or it can become highly complex and you can really develop your concentration and your discriminating awareness. So this thing that I wanted to show you here is an example of instructions. And so what I found with reading crochet instructions, if you kind of just have a look at this and you don't know about it, you just go, oh my God, does my head in. But there's a few things that happens here. One is, to be able to do it, you must relax. So just getting that habit of trying to focus your mind and then relaxing can transfer over to your meditation practice and to your life. Then there's also a couple of different ways of focusing. So one is where you actually focus, and the other is where you let your attention broaden. So you use both of those skills when you're crocheting, when you're doing any kind of craft. Actually, one is a super focus, like a laser beam, very specific. The other type of concentration is where you relax everything, but you stay very clear and alert. And so this is what happens when you're trying to read crochet instructions, that you have to relax your mind. You focus, you go, oh my God, I don't understand what's going on here. Then you have to relax your mind, become very alert, and let the meaning become apparent. So for instance, this one for round 14, chain one, which doesn't count as a stitch, one single crochet into the next stitch, one half double crochet into the next three stitches, one single crochet into the skipped chain at the top of the next thin leaf made on round 9, the previous one, back 3, skip the next stitch on the previous round, one single crochet in the next stitch, three single crochet into the next chain space, five single crochet, and so on. Half single crochet in each of the next three stitches, one single crochet in the next four stitches, repeat from the start to the end, omitting one single crochet on the repeat on the final pattern, slip stitch to join 100 stitches, just like the 100 syllable mantra. So as your concentration gets better and as you relax your mind, doing this becomes really enjoyable. It's kind of like the crafter's way of doing Sudoku, you know. You're sharpening your mind. It's an exercise in sharpening your mind. It is something, it's external, so it's a bit different from meditation, because meditation, your object, your focus is within the mind. It's not going out there. So we have to be careful about that to actually set our motivation to transfer those skills inwards. I did ask Corey one time about the type of concentration that we have, say when we're surfing, when we're cooking, when we're doing craft. Can that concentration be transferred to the inner life, to our meditation practice? And he said it could, but it doesn't actually happen very often, because what we're doing is we're relying on an external object to draw our focus. So it is a type of concentration, but it's actually our attention being captured continuously. So we have to make a bit of effort to turn it into the path to enlightenment. And the way to do that is to set that motivation, have this internal dialogue going on, that as we're doing each activity, we're actually using it as a trigger to think about that inner life, about drawing beings out of suffering, about creating something from our life that's meaningful, about liberating others. So to finish the story about the rug that I made for my dear friend Naomi, then at the end of the retreat, I thought, okay, I was going to give the rug to Naomi, and I asked Lama Zopa Rinpoche to bless it. And so fortunate, at the airport, their flight was a little bit delayed, so we had a chance to meet at the airport, and I showed the rug to Rinpoche and I asked Rinpoche to bless it. So he went through the whole rug, blowing on it, saying mantras, blessing it, and blowing on it. Each square, just about, blowing on it. And so that's him blowing. There's Naomi there in the middle. Me trying to be really polite and super excited. And so then, because of course the rug's quite long, so Naomi stood up and we just wrapped her in it. It was like wrapping her up in a cocoon, and she's there completely wrapped up. She couldn't move her arms or anything. And went around and around and around, like I don't know how many times. And I said, oh, you know, Rinpoche, the rug's a bit long. I made it a bit long. And he said, very good, very good. It was like extra long for an extra long life. So what you make like that can become really, really special. So then every time, you know, when you do something like this, then you can dedicate. May, you know, every time that you put on that crochet, may you be protected by the three higher trainings, which is what the garments that the Buddha wears represent, those three higher trainings. May you wear the mantle of Dharma, carry the mantle of Dharma to help others. May you always feel warm and protected by remembering the Guru. May you always have a long, meaningful life. You know, shake out those hassle tassels. So the dedication that that we can do when we've got the hobby, we've got all of our itemized different steps along the way that we've hitchhiked these Dharma thoughts to, and then at the end we can do this incredible dedication. So when I was making costumes, again, you know, it's not a very life-changing thing for the world, but when I would finish the costume, often I'd sew in little dedications in between the lining and the main garment, and I make all these prayers. So there's one really beautiful prayer that comes from the Gold Prayer Book, Essential Buddhist Prayers, Volume 1. It's on page 186 as part of the extensive dedications from the daily meditation practice. And so this is the verse that I really love. Due to all the merits of the three times accumulated by me and by others, merely by seeing, hearing, remembering, touching, or talking to me, or thinking about the crochet, may any being be freed in that very second from all their sufferings, diseases, spirit harms, negative karmas, and obscurations, and may they abide in the peerless happiness of full enlightenment forever. So you go, that's the dedication. Everyone who sees the crochet, may they be free of all their sufferings and abide in full enlightenment forever. So if you do those prayers, then what happens is, you know, people see the crochet, or they see the costumes in the play, in the street performer, and they just get happy. It becomes really powerful. So you knit little animals, toys for the kiddies, they become powerful objects because of that, because of the force of your prayers that imbue that object. So hopefully you've got some really good ideas now of whatever hobbies, those things that you love doing, how to bring meaning to them, how to bring them on the path to enlightenment, and how they can actually really focus and propel your Dharma practice. And then instead of becoming the ultimate time waster, you know, people grow up and retire and just play bingo till they die. Like, what's the point? But this way you can make a really big point. So let's dedicate the merits in that way. And thank you very much for coming. And what we can do now is go to gallery view. And I will just change the settings so that if you want to turn your video on, and I will make it so that you can unmute yourselves. Here we go. La la la, here comes everybody. Great, excellent. So we've got June, Alison, Samantha, and Carol. So you can unmute yourselves. And I was hoping if you've got any questions or comments, or if you have any hobby that you're thinking you're very excited about bringing onto the path, let's talk about how to do it. So Samantha, you've got your thing unmuted. How are you going?
I'm good. Yeah, that was fun. I mean, I guess cooking is something that I do to relax. So I could see how some ways, and yeah, I'd be interested in how you bring some of those ideas, piggyback them on, as you're saying, or hitchhike them along. But the other thing that I spend a lot of time doing is podcasting. And I was thinking, oh, how do you do this with a food and travel podcast?
But same.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And at the end, you know, it's like, well, you know, I do want people who are listening to it to feel at peace and to be free of suffering and So, yeah, I think I need to put some effort, I think, into thinking it through.
You need to get a list. So,
okay.
So for instance, with the cooking is fantastic because you can very easily hitchhike. By me providing this sustenance, may you and everybody have the sustenance of the Dharma, have the nourishment of the Dharma. So as you're dishing it up, that's just what you're thinking.
Yeah.
As I'm dishing this up, may I be able to dish up the Dharma. It's good if you get these little sayings and liberate all sentient beings. May I be able to dish up the Dharma to everybody as I'm dishing it up to these people. May I be able to dish up the Dharma to everybody. May they enjoy the Dharma as much as they enjoy the dinner.
Okay.
Then also, you know, like when you're preparing food, you're being careful So as I'm preparing this food, may I also be careful with sentient beings. May all sentient beings be careful with each other. May they never harm each other. You know, you could, it keeps on going, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
As you're cleaning up the kitchen, it's like, may I be able to, you know, like at the end of each puja, we do the Vajrasattva mantra to purify any mistakes. So as you're cleaning up the kitchen, it's may I be able to purify any mistakes before they snowball.
Yep.
And especially if you're working with your speech, so podcasts or anything like that, bless your speech. So there is a speech blessing practice.
Oh, okay.
And the blessing the mantras on your tongue, and then they absorb into your tongue. And the ending prayer is, you know, may my tongue have all the courage of the ones gone to bliss. By the meaning of these words, may all sentient beings be subdued. By the power of these glorious words, may all sentient beings be subdued. May the meanings of whatever words I say be actualized immediately. So this way, it means that even if you're talking about just food and travel, your voice has the power of the blessings of the Buddhas. So it can bring happiness to others. Mm. It won't harm them. Even if things come out the wrong way, it won't harm them. And the little things that you say, like, may you enjoy for everybody, may everybody enjoy this one day, those seeds become powerful. So then you can do stealth dharma in your podcast. And anything that you say that is kind or that encourages altruism will go in very deeply.
Okay.
So email me and I'll send you the speech blessing. Don't leave home without it.
Okay.
Don't open your mouth without it. Every time I'm leading class, I do the speech blessing beforehand.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's marvelous.
And it's also good for if you've got family meetings, if you've got court cases, everything.
Okay. Oh, well, that could come in handy too. Awesome. Thank you, Missy.
That's great, Samantha. And so let's see, June, how are you going?
Oh, yeah, good. Thank you. I was just thinking all those things apply to me too. I do a bit of all of that. I love cooking and I do a bit of crochet. And also I'm a nurse. And so I'd never sort of thought about, you know, how to bring that into my everyday nursing. And also I have a small business as well. So it's clothing. And like, I've just been recently counting my stock, you know, and I thought, oh, I could have done something a bit better with that now that I've listened to.
So there's a huge thing that you can do. You can bless each of those items of clothing. You can do it in a whole job lot.
Yeah.
You can say mantras over them and blow on them. Bless your speech, then say the mantras over them and blow on them. May everybody who wears this clothing always be protected, have a long and healthy life, never harm anybody, all their temporal and spiritual wishes come to fruition, make their life most meaningful, you know, all of those things.
Yeah. And so, I can also do that when I'm working. I just sort of say similar.
With nursing, in particular, there's a very quick and short way that you can do it. And you can also do it, this is how I discovered to do it, if you go and get like a neck massage or something like that, so if someone is looking after you, then if you have an initiation, you dissolve into emptiness and arise as the deity. So that, for instance, if someone is giving you a massage, now they are giving, say, Tara a massage. So they make mountains of merit. They don't know, but they're making this incredible merit because you've manifested as a deity and they're doing it as an offering to a deity. The other thing that you can do is that when you are looking after somebody, you manifest as the deity so that you're looking up, as I'm looking after them physically, may I look after all sentient beings in the best possible way and bring them to enlightenment. So you just have to say that at the beginning. You don't have to do it all the way through because you've got to focus on, you know, being a nurse. But you make it a causal motivation at the beginning. You don't start without it.
Okay.
And then everything that you do from then comes from that motivation. It's okay. And when you are looking after each person, think that they are a manifestation of your guru. So I think this is Lama Dhopa Rinpoche manifesting as a patient to teach me compassion, patience, carefulness. So I think that it's an offering to the guru, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I think it's His Holiness the Dalai Lama manifesting as this human being in front of me. Mm. So Mother Teresa did that. You know, she'd think each person is Jesus there manifesting in front of her to care for. They just have to do that at the beginning of each time and then off you go doing your mundane things, but they're focused in that way.
Mm. That's good, because I do, if I'm looking after people, I do say, well, this is like my mother or my father or my brother or my sister. So yeah. I'm sort of doing that already, but that's...
You can bump it up.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And so, like, you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama or Lama Zopa Rinpoche, you know, Chenrezig in human form. So you can think, this is my offering to great Chenrezig. Mm. It's my offering to the guru. And by doing this, may I be able to help not just this sentient being, but all sentient beings, and not just in this temporary way, but in an ultimate way. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, then you dedicate everybody that I've touched today or spoken to or seen, may you become like a bridge between them and Buddhahood. By just seeing you, hearing you, thinking about you, being washed by you, being blood taken by you, whatever it is, may that be the connection that leads them to enlightenment. Mm. Then you dedicate at the end.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
That's great. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Mm. And who else? Then Carol, how about you? How are you going today?
I'm fine. I think my thing is waking up early in the morning. All my life, I wake up at about 5 or 6 o'clock, just as daylight is coming, and I always go for a walk on my own for half an hour in the early morning. And, you know, sometimes I wake up feeling miserable or downcast or upset. But I know when I walk up through the front door and I see the dawn, it's just like a gift, you know?
Yeah.
And that gift is something for me to utilize and to show appreciation. And sometimes it's raining. I have my umbrella up. Sometimes there's a lot of fog because I'm on Tambourine Mountain. But the mist is very soft and it softens all the harsh lines. Mm-hmm. And I feel as though I'm walking in a cloud.
Yeah.
And
there's Carol, there's a huge amount that you can do to just tweak it a little bit to make it a Dharma thing, because the wonderful thing about waking up so early, so they say when you become enlightened, you become enlightened at dawn, because what's happening in the mind and what's happening outside are one.
Mm-hmm.
So when you wake up at dawn, then it's like a practice for becoming enlightened. So Geshe Zopa's often said, you know, when you wake up and you first open your eyes, try and just stay very still and stay in that space where you're alert, but before all the concepts have come in, and really get used to being very quiet and resting in that space as the dawn is coming and you're becoming conscious, to stay with that dawning, because that is like a practice for staying in the clear light. And so that means also at death time, when we go through the death process and go through all those very, very subtle, the coarse dissolutions and the subtle ones. And then the very final one is the arising of the clear light, like dawn, that very subtle time that you know how poignant and amazing it is. So practice resting in that without rushing off. So do that for as long as you can when you first open your eyes, and then when everything kind of swims into focus, then as you get up, then you think, as I get up, may I lift all sentient beings out of samsara into that enlightenment.
I have noticed when I'm walking that you meet very few people, but the people that you meet are always warm and always recognize one another, and or each other's dogs, whatever yeah. it is. But, you know, other times you can walk in the day and the feeling is not the same, you know, because there's less people and because it's very early, people seem to reach out to one another.
Yeah, it's a different time. The morning walk like that, the kind of relaxation, it's like with crochet or anything or cooking, the relaxation that we get is there whilst we're walking. A little bit of it transfers for the rest of the day, but then it's done. So actually, what's it for? What is the relaxation for? So while you're walking and enjoying it in that beautiful, relaxed space, bring some deeper meaning to it. Because you're already feeling it, but you've got to bring the words to it. Mm. So that, you know, as you're walking, may I walk in the footsteps of the Buddha or the footsteps of, you know, who your heroes are. So if you set that off as you're walking, then as you keep on walking, you'll keep going in that internal direction as well. May I always walk in the footsteps of the Buddha. May I not fall off my spiritual path. You know, as a Buddhist, you can think about as you're going along the path, may I go along the grounds and paths.
Thank you.
So then it becomes more than just that half an hour.
Yeah.
And the power of it becomes profound, really, really strong. So this was one of the other things too, of like how to... for instance, use golfing on the way to path to enlightenment, because as you've got all of the hills and dales, it's like the ups and downs, you keep equanimity. May you traverse the grounds and paths all the way to enlightenment. You have your caddy with all the golf clubs, it's like your six perfections or your 37 practices of the bodhisattvas, depending how many clubs you have. As you're holding the club, you've got to use the two hands, wisdom and compassion. You've got to have complete equanimity and equilibrium. And then the focus to get the ball in the hole, may I achieve the path of no more learning, enlightenment. As you're pulling the caddy with you, you know, may I bring all sentient beings with me. So even golf can become part of the path to enlightenment. But all of that, the thing about a morning walk, like you were saying, all of the feeling that comes from it, you use that feeling as what propels you in your meditation. Because often when we sit down with meditation, it's quite dry. So if we use something that we love doing, we start thinking, why do I love it? Actually, why do we love it is because in it, buried in it, is this incredible meaning. Mm. And you know, then you can riff on a theme. You can use it to really propel your mind in that, in a really not just peaceful direction, but a virtuous direction. So that when it's misty and it's all beautiful and soft, then start thinking, oh, how wonderful if everybody's minds became softened. May they become softened with the moisture of compassion.
I like that.
You know, and then you just put that thought in there, and then you're becoming really familiar with these incredibly virtuous thoughts. And you too can set your motivation. Everybody who sees me today on the path, May they be freed of all their fears, illnesses, disturbing emotions. May they attain lasting happiness, the peerless happiness of enlightenment. So as they're walking past, you go, hi. You're going, ha, 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 stealth Dharma.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
But really, the dawn time is so special, Carol, and many times, even when people are doing retreats, if they don't have much time during the day, the dawn session is the one that you do. You can cut out all the others, but, you know, there's something very special about it. So it's great that you love getting up early. Hats off to you. I hate getting up early.
Yeah.
And Alison, how are you? First in, last to talk.
Sorry?
Oh, hang on. I can't hear you. You need to go down to the microphone and allow computer audio or something. No, can't hear you. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll try.
It's the mute.
Ask to unmute.
Yeah.
I know what I can do. Try this. Alison, I think you have to go down to the bottom there where the little microphone icon is, bottom left, and have a look at the up arrow and select a different microphone. Because your microphone...
Is that any better? I'm trying. All right. So much mucking around.
Yes, well, that's another thing. It's like by trying to conquer the technology, may we conquer our delusions.
So who was it who gets up early in the morning? I agree. It's the best time.
Yeah. Carol. Yeah. It's inspiring. I'm a lot more like Miffy. I don't particularly want to get up in the morning. The silly thing is I'm awake anyway, but I just cling on to not wanting to do that. But you described it really beautifully. It's quite motivating. I'm going to give it a shot.
I think it's
I can recommend it.
I wake up when the sun rises.
Yeah, I do.
No matter when the sun rises.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get much sleep through summer.
No.
So what else, Alison, what other kind of any hobbies or crafting or things, something?
I do heaps of stuff. Knitting, crochet, I do a lot of hand sewing, embroidery, spinning. I don't spin much anymore. I don't really like it. I thought I would love it, but turns out I don't like it at all. But I like dyeing wool. And choosing the colours. This is
Wow!
I don't know how nicely it's showing up.
It's beautiful.
But I love. Thank you. I love dyeing wool. I do cotton now. No longer use wool.
One of the things with dyeing wool in particular, and also if you're using lots of different colours that you can do, is think about, the five colours of the five wisdoms. So they're the same colours as the prayer flags. And when they do the sand mandalas, you know, the lamas, and they make those incredible sand mandalas. So when they're blessing the coloured sand, and we can do this with yarn, with the colours, you dissolve it into your view of it into emptiness. So, you kind of recognise it's a dependent arising. That exists in name only, and then from that emptiness you invite all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and so that each colour becomes like a representation of those Buddhas and Bodhisattvas' wisdom. And so when they're doing the sand mandalas, each little grain of sand represents a Buddha.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so when you're dyeing the wool, then or the cotton, you can think each of the colours represents a wisdom. So may you bring forth that particular wisdom.
Okay, I could do that. And then we'll end up with all the colours in.
All the colours. Then everybody who wears it, may that that be the trigger for them to bring forth that wisdom.
I could do that. And also I was going to ask, I give a lot away. I do a lot of knitting. I do for like the Karuna end of year market and also for Knitting for Brisbane's Needy. So something I could add before I pop it in the bag to be sent off.
Yeah, that one. So if you've got the gold prayer book, or if not, then email me and I'll send you that paragraph. But the one of was on page
18. One that you said before.
Due to all the merits of the three times accumulated by me and others, merely by seeing, hearing, remembering, touching, or talking about that object.
Okay, so I can just do each one with that.
Yeah.
You can pop it in the bag. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of really nice thoughts and wish them really, because a lot of it ends up going to the homeless.
Yeah, so, that's right.
And wish really good things for them, but it'd be nice to have something a bit more solid.
So you have that initial thought of just really wanting to help others, but then you bring your awareness to it and make it the most. So the formula that Rinpoche explained to us is not just this temporary happiness, but ultimate happiness, ultimate peace. So, you know, with anything like crochet or knitting, may they have the ultimate protection of the Dharma. And by wearing this, may they be brought to enlightenment. So, you know, not just the temporary joy, but the ultimate one. That's the first part of the formula. Then the second part of the formula is, and may I be the one to lead them.
Okay.
That's the Bodhisattva attitude that kind of takes this personal responsibility. So by them having that knitted thing or that pot of jam or whatever it is, that's like the connector, the bridge between you and them. And then by them having it, may that create this unbreakable connection that I can lead them out of suffering and into liberation and enlightenment.
Thank you.
So, you know, then everything just takes off, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How exciting.
So start with just one thing, something that you really love doing and you do quite regularly, and then just gently add on a couple of ways to turn it into a Dharma practice using really short sentences. Until it just becomes automatic. So it might take a week or two before it becomes automatic, and then put the next one on. And really then if you do it at the beginning, then if you need to actually use your concentration to do whatever with the, you know, with the looking after people or the actual crochet stitches or whatever, you've still got the causal motivation, so you still set it at the beginning, so it still goes in that positive direction. And then at the end, you do the dedication, and you just go for it with the dedication. And as you're packaging it up, then you go, oh, yeah, and may it do this, and may it do that, and may they be free of this, and may they be free of that. And may they find the home of, you know, the Pure Lands. May they be looked after by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas.
Brilliant.
So I hope you enjoyed this morning, and Carol, very nice to have you back again, and that you're kind of getting quite an array of different types of Dharma class.
Yes, and I've got my little notebook here, and I've been filling it with all in my notes. Like a good little pupil.
So Carol braved the technology for the first time last night and downloaded Zoom, and here she is again this morning.
Oh, yeah. Well done.
Yeah. You know, what attracted me the most to coming to these workshops was to be with people like yourselves. You know, there's a sense of beauty and warmth and kindness and amongst people who are interested in Buddhism. And this is what has drawn me to it, because the world is so full of madness and unkindness and, you know, unhappiness, that it's a real pleasure to be around people like yourselves. That's why I've joined.
That's lovely, Cheryl.
It's very nice of you to say, and we need to have like a community like that to kind of inspire us and nourish us, so that then when we go out into the world, we can be the ones that bring that joy to others. But we need to rely on our Dharma community, our Dharma brothers and sisters. So
beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. Let's dedicate all of the merit that that we can get really enthused about our Dharma practice and integrate it into those things that we already do every day in our life. We hitchhike it onto those already established habits. Then we'll hitchhike it onto habits for happiness, and then all the way to the habit of enlightenment. So see you next week, everybody.